There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 647, January 19th, 2014. Nasser?
Greetings and welcome to the Janus edition of the podcast, where we look back to 2013 and forward to the 2014 season. Back to you, Hercules.
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, Ron Dennis takes the helm back at McLaren. Double points are here to stay, and Williams could surprise this year. And of course, this entire podcast is brought to you by Motorsports Mondial, and we have the 2013 F1 season review. Nas, welcome to the studio. How are you?
Very good, sir. Thank you for this wonderful Pete's coffee.
Quality.
Service is excellent in the palatial studio. But talking of coffee and breakfast, I understand you do have some sad news to share with our listeners.
Absolutely. Terrible news. The F1 Weekly coffee shop, you may say, or call it a diner, our breakfast place where me and Nasser always brainstormed over our bubbles and squeak, burnt down yesterday morning.
Yeah.
Tragically.
I'm going to miss our Tex-Mex omelette with sourdough bread.
Great service. Fantastic waitresses. This was an institution. And of course, right around the corner from the Palatial Studios. There you have it. They have burnt down.
Flames got flamed out.
Sad, that's the irony. Yeah. It was called Flames.
Yeah. But they have one on Winchester Avenue also.
I know, but so that's not backup within the Palatial Studios environs.
Yeah, yes. Outside the driving distance.
Correct. Anyway, NASA, I see that you've got some comments. But before we jump into this review, what do you think about Ron Dennis having that motivational speech at McLaren and Martin Whitmarsh nowhere to be seen?
The last word was the most important. We will win again.
Exactly.
And frankly speaking, I've never met Martin Whitmarsh. I don't know him. Looks like a nice guy. But when he was appointed as head of the team, you know, Grand Prix racing is for piranhas and ruthless people.
He absolutely. Like it's not for children.
Yeah, he just looked like, an MBA from Cranfield or whatever it's called, or some London School of Economics or Stanford. Too nice of a guy to be in that piranha pool. He was with Westland Helicopters, Agusta, whatever. So he was flying high before he came to Formula One, but I just did not seem somebody. It was like that guy, you know, Russian-Canadian Alex Schneider, Teal Tycoon, whatever. I mean, he just did not fit in, you know. I mean, Vijay Mallya, sure, he's a tycoon from alcohol business, ex-airline man, but he looks like a hustler.
He is a hustler.
You know, you can tell this guy belongs in the paddock. So I'm not surprised, and, you know, with Honda coming, and I'm not sure how much the signing and what happened with Sergio Perez played a role in this, but Ron Dennis is mean.
He's ruthless.
He's ruthless.
He's Darth Vader.
Yes, he wants to win yesterday, today, and tomorrow. So I'm excited, and I'm a fan of motor racing, so anything that's, you know, leading towards something positive, I'm all for it. But, you know, whoa, 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 whoa.
Are we forgetting something?
Yes, we're more important. We have another U.S. entry. Again, the operation is based in Charlotte, North Carolina.
Penske?
No, Gene Haas. You know this Haas NASCAR team, Stuart Haas?
You mean the cigar?
Haas? No, that's Carl Haas.
Oh, see, for a minute there, I was going, he's a little old.
No, this is the Haas in Haas CNC Machine Company.
Oh, that Haas.
Yes.
Big company.
He owns the wind shear, wind tunnel also. When a gentleman where Ken Anderson works, I think, still. So I'm just waiting for an announcement that Peter Windsor will be the PR guy, and here we go again.
Is Argentina anywhere near this? Or have they kept their hands clean?
Yeah, I think they need to contact this driver who was racing here, Esteban Guerrieri. Then the full cycle will be really completed.
That's so beautiful. That's great news, Nasser. I'm always happy to hear about USF1.
Yeah, and Colin Collis also is trying to
pull some teeth,
you know, to get the remaining slot. And also this guy, Stefan from Slovenia or whatever he's from. You
Uzbekistan?
Know, it was the part of the great ex-Yugoslavian Empire.
Oh.
Slovenia, Serbia, Croatia, Bosnia-Herzegovina, whatever. But we shall see. But we want Formula One to start now.
It's going to start. Let's think about 2013, how exciting it was.
Yes, sir.
Because it started off not having a big V for Vettel.
Well, you're right. Before the season started, hopes were high that Sebastian Vettel's triple play will be over. Nando was long overdue for his third championship, and Kimi, after winning in Abu Dhabi in 2012, knew what he was doing in the cockpit of a race car, and LCH wanted to win a championship with a team other than McLaren. And of course, his teammate Nico, pretty boy Floyd Rosberg, wanted to continue the family legacy. What were your thoughts before the season started?
I was excited, you know, because whenever, for me, when a Formula One season starts, that's excitement enough. I'm pumped up. And this is what we wait for. Australia, the first race. And, of course, Kimi Raikkonen at Lotus. I thought that was a great coup.
Sergio Perez at McLaren.
And we thought that was an interesting concept. We were surprised. There were a lot of surprises in 2013. I was ready. I mean, I was excited. And, of course, I've been a Lotus Renault fan for a while. And having tired of Sebastian Vettel at Red Bull Renault, I was ready for a new champion. That's really what we were looking for, wasn't it?
Yeah, but I'm very surprised that you are not excited with... I mean, you were very pumped up with Nando winning, but Sebastian Vettel is powered by Renault.
I understand, and I do like Sebastian Vettel at Renault, but three wins is enough. Three championships is enough, and we need it. I mean, don't forget 2012. Remember all the winners, the different races? It was exciting. That's what I was hoping. And a lot of people thought that was going to continue, and it did begin a little bit that way.
Yes.
Until the big changes, pretty much. I think after Silverstone and the implementation of the new tires, everything changed.
Yeah. Round one, as you said, was Australia. Final qualifying and race in Albert Park, Melbourne, took place on Sunday due to rain. The previous day, local mate Mark Webber delighted the natives with front row grid position. And it's good that a few of our listeners are always at the race. But pole belonged to his teammate Sebastian Vettel.
Lewis Hamilton was third on the grid in his first start for a team other than McLaren in F1. Felipe Massa was faster than Fernando. And see, I had forgotten that part.
Yeah. Gee, why am I not surprised?
Of course, that was in qualifying. He qualified right next to Lewis Hamilton. Nando was on row three and Nico Rosberg sixth. Kimi Raikkonen was seventh on the grid, but he had a trick.
And a vodka up his sleeve.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, now, Esteban Gutierrez, our amigo from Monterrey, Mexico, qualified 18th for his F1 debut. But his was the only Sauber on the grid on Sunday as Nico Hülkenberg did not start. The team was unable to fix some fuel system issues on his car. In your Francais, Charles Pic failed to qualify within the 107% rule, but was allowed to start thanks to Stewart's generosity. And I think they allow these people, this happened a few times during the season, that I mean, if you're running in qualifying and you don't get the speed, then they won't let you. But if you had the speed in practice or whatever,
correct,
something went wrong, then they will take that into consideration. And I think a little tenderness is better in
Well, especially when you only have 22 cars.
Yeah. Okay, shall we go to the race now?
The race was exciting for me.
Really?
Yes.
Seven drivers led the opening round of the 2013 season. Vettel led the first six laps before coming in for new rubber. He would make two more stops for fresh tires as more drivers made their first stops for tires on lap 23 of 58. Kimi Raikkonen found himself leading the race.
Hard to believe. Tire management was key, and the victory of vodka is as quick and smooth as they come. Kimi only made two stops compared to three for most of the competition, and that made the difference and gave him victory number 20 in his career.
Nando was second and Sebastian Vettel third. Massa and Hamilton completed the top five. Grosjean in 10th men, both Lotus Card scored points in the season opener. And now let's hear it from the race winner.
Yeah, for sure, it's the best way. So, but like I said, we were pretty happy with the car in Barcelona. Once we came here, we seemed to improve the car, and it's been very good all weekend. So it was a bit disappointing to only qualified 7th, but with the conditions how they were, it wasn't the easiest one. So I knew if I made through the first lap with a pretty good position, we should give ourselves a good chance on fighting on a podium, and turned out to be not too difficult.
Kimi also set the fastest lap at 1 minute 29.274 on lap 56, which is 2 laps from the end. The absolute track record here is held by Michael Schumacher from the 2004 race at 1 minute 24.125. Shall we move on to round 2?
Yes, now this is a race you went to.
Yes, sir, and we had GP2 Hapidos Media Pass, so that made life easier, but there are no camels in Malaysia, at least not at Sepang International Circuit. Multi 21 or Multi 21 was the last straw that broke the camel's back in the relationship between the two Red Bull drivers. Tell me, what was your impression of that situation, looking back now?
For me, it looked like the young, peach-fuzzed-faced Sebastian Vettel has become a ruthless man on the track to win at any cost, including going against orders from Christian Horner.
Yes. The race took place on March 24th, and like you said, I was there. Fantastic place, fantastic people, but the heat and humidity was too much for me. The race was a week after the season opener in Australia. Vettel took pole, and a surprise second was Felipe Massa, leaving fast friends from the 2007 season on the second row, Nando being third and LCH fourth. Story of the race was man fifth on the grid, Mark Webber.
Vettel led at the start, but Nando was out on the second lap after damaging his front wing shortly after the start. After only 5 laps, Vettel came in for fresh rubber.
You know, this Nando's damage, he had a chance to come in on the opening lap.
I mean, we didn't understand that.
And I just cannot believe why. I mean, this was early in the season, early in the race. It was 1 lap to go, I understand. But that was baffling, you know. It was as baffling as that tire following Webber into the pits in Abu Dhabi some years ago.
Yeah, it's a bizarre world, but it's the beginning of the season. Maybe they were a little nervous.
They were.
So there you have it. And anyway, a few laps later, Hamilton comes into McLaren pit thinking it was the old homestead. Pretty funny. Mark also made his first pit stop at this time, and since he did not stop at the Toro Rosso pit, the Aussie mate took the lead. That was pretty good stuff, though.
Yeah. On lap 42, Vettel makes his final pit stop and takes on option tires. And, you know, I was at that race, and you can run between the two sections of the track, see the two different parts. Very, very impressive. A lap later, Webber makes his final stop and takes on prime tires and retains the lead, almost 5 seconds ahead of Vettel. Looking good for his first F1 win since the 2012 British Grand Prix.
His teammate had other ideas. Despite being told on the radio, this is silly, Vettel apparently ignored team's game plan, codename Multi-21, and barged his way past Webber. So it was 2 Red Bulls ahead of the Mercedes cars, LCH, on the podium. The podium had the look and feel of Imola, 1982.
You know, I look at that some pictures again on the web. It's just, you can see this is the whole...
Oh, it was one
trouble in the family.
But I like that. I like a little trouble in the family.
That is very true. And the thing is, you know, this driver thing, you know, that we have an agreement, unless it's the final race and your teammate, you have no chance to win and your teammate had a chance, then I can understand a driver helping another guy. But this kind of stuff, you know, that a lot of drivers have pulled out in many series, not just Formula One, halfway through the season or early part, that we had an agreement. Racing driver is like a fighter pilot. His instinct is to shoot down the other guy. So I don't think this will ever work out. But the drive and decision by Vettel to pass Webber made one thing clear, which you already brought up once and for all. Despite all his smiles, good humor, and boyish looks, on track he is as ruthless as his fellow countrymen, whose record he's now chasing and smashing. there will be no mercy for Mark Webber in his farewell season in Formula One. Sergio Perez picked up his first points for McLaren by finishing 9th and also set the fastest lap on the final lap with a time of 1:39.199. Track record in Malaysia is held by Montoya from the 2004 race at 1:34.223. Back then he was driving for the BMW-powered Williams team. You know, you mentioned Schumacher's name a couple of times here. Again, there is no news from his medical team, so we're not going to speculate. And just like everybody else, we want to wish him all the best.
Absolutely.
And hopefully good recovery.
Yeah. No, that was an exciting Grand Prix in Malaysia simply because of Multi 21. Without that, I wouldn't have been a very happy camper.
Yeah, but you know that track is very fantastic. It's a beautiful track, beautiful location, very good transportation from city center. It's a little bit outside the city, but it was very well organized. But the man, the heat and humidity was just like...
This is a racetrack I would never go to.
Yeah, and I cannot believe that these drivers race in there. You know, we are normally required to show up to the GP2 area once we have the credentials. I went there. I mean, I had just gotten to the track. I was like all wet, and this lady we deal with, I wanted to say hello to her. And, you know, she was like, also, hi, leave me
Everybody's
alone.
Suffering.
Oh, yeah, it's pretty bad, pretty bad. Shall we go to round three? Oh, I'm sure you would. You probably preferred round three to start the season.
Absolutely. It should have started the season.
Yes. By the number of people in the grandstands on race day, you wouldn't think this is the most populous nation in the world. But the Chinese Grand Prix goes on in Shanghai year after year. LCH took pole with Lotus lad Kimi Raikkonen sharing the front row with him. Nando was third after Q3. And any time Nando, well, he came back from a long way off in Valencia, but if he's on the front two rows, watch out for him for the start and the end of the race.
Absolutely. Not only that, but it gave us an inkling that perhaps the Ferrari might be competitive after all.
Yeah, that it won't be a runaway season. Webber qualified 14th, but moved to the back of the grid for failing to provide 1 liter fuel sample after qualifying.
This was interesting. The race result was the reverse of top three in qualifying, and Nando taking his first win since the 2012 German Grand Prix. He also won this race in 2005 in the halcyon days of Mile 7 and not-so-mile Briatore. Bravo, bravo, bravo. My favorite blue car. You have to admit, it was a gorgeous car.
I really, really miss those days because it was a good combination. I'll never forget something about Briatore. This was in his Benetton days. A race is going on, and the camera goes to Briatore smoking, and Bob Warshaw making a comment, Briatore smoking of all the places in the pit lane. That was with all those fuel tanks there.
I love it.
Yeah, those were good days, you know. Fisico, Jarno Trulli. Remember when Kovalainen made his debut with the team in Australia? Boy, how lost he was.
Boy, he did lose badly.
I remember Flavio's comment after the race that it was not Hickey in the car, it was his brother. I mean, it was so bad.
Yeah, no, it was sad.
Keep calm and carry on, please.
Shanghai was the venue for the 91st and final Grand Prix win for Michael Schumacher in 2006. For me, the everlasting memory of the Chinese Grand Prix will be the rookie world championship lost in the kitty litter of 2007, and that was unbelievable. Poor LCH.
Yeah, and you know,
under
what,
the pressure of Fernando.
Well, I remember during the race, you know, when he stayed out way too long on one of the laps. I think Kimi was closing in at one time by 7 seconds a lap, and it was just, that thing in the kitty litter was such a. It was the only. No, now they have all these tarmac and whatever
runoff
areas. That was the only place where they had this sand pit. And, you know, he became a sandpiper and sang a lonely tune, The Shadow of Your Smile.
My favorite song.
Yes, mine too. Okay, Sebastian Vettel was fourth after starting ninth. He also recorded the fastest lap with a time of 1:36.808, 3 laps from the end of the 56-lap race. And again, Schumacher has the absolute track record here, again from 2004. And 2004 has been the theme of the fastest lap this season.
It's called V10s.
Yes. Schumacher's time was 1:32.238. And normally I was noticing it was about a 4 to 5 seconds different, except in Monte Carlo, which we will pick up later on. And now we go to the desert of Arabia. Remember when Johnny Carson used to do the Karnak with that Moroccan hat and all that?
Absolutely. I love the great Karnak.
Yeah, maybe we should do that Karnak thing. you pick the name of the race winner before the race takes place, and we'll see if you're right.
Speaking of TV shows, I was watching Jeopardy the other day, and they had a Formula One question.
And I'm sure the blonde guessed it right away.
Listen to this. It was very interesting, but the answer was, who is Michael and Ralph? And so the contestant said, the Andretti's. Can you believe it?
At least she was on the racing track.
Exactly.
Right track.
But it was stunning. And even Mario Andretti was watching the show, and he commented about the question on Facebook.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so that was very interesting.
Yeah. You know, funny you said this, long, long time ago when Jody Scheckter was racing, when he had first come, you know, he made a big impact right away. I was listening to a quiz program on BBC World Service, and the question was, I'll never forget this, what nationality is the racing driver Jody Scheckter? And you know what the answer lady said? Hungarian.
It's beautiful. So, yeah. Goulash.
Yes. So let's go to Bahrain. The Bahrain 2013 Grand Prix was sponsored by the spirit of Neville Chamberlain. There will be peace in our lifetime. BIC, Bahrain International Circuit, is not razor sharp of a racing track. It was one of the first designs from the mind of Hermann, the German Tilke. But it did bring Formula One to the Arab world for the first time since the final race of the 1958 season in the streets of Casablanca.
Back to the 2013 event, Nico Rosberg flying the Mercedes flag takes pole position from fellow countrymen. The talented Mr. Vettel. Nando was third on the grid next to his amigo LCH, but Nicole Scherzinger's father, Pussycat Doll, dropped five places for a gearbox change.
Not father, faster Pussycat. Faster. By the way, talking of Nicole, now there are reports that she may be moving in with Lewis Hamilton.
I saw that on the forum.
Yeah.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
You know, they're off. They're back again.
He's off. She's on the Dijon 1970.
Exactly. That's the
She's
that's,
off. She's on. She's
I,
off.
I love it.
Yeah. Okay. In the race, it was Vettel winning from the Lotus boys, Raikkonen finishing second after starting eighth, and Romain Grosjean also. Have you ever heard how these people at F1 Reject pronounce Romain Grosjean's name?
No.
Very, very French style.
You mean you're listening to other podcasts?
Yeah, yeah, you know, sometimes you have to do these things.
The pain!
Yes, but it's interesting. Grosjean also appeared on the podium after starting 11th. I mean, are you going to stop me from listening to the BBC podcast?
Absolutely not.
Thank you very much, sir. Okay, impressive performances both from Grosjean and Kimi. Paul Di Resta was fourth for Force India.
Vettel also set the fastest lap with a time of 136.961 on lap 55 of the 57-lap race. He also won the race in 2012. The absolute track record is held by Schumacher from the 2004 race on board a Ferrari with a time of 130.252.
The first Bahrain Grand Prix in 2004 was won by the Ferrari of Mr. Schumacher, and Nando won here in 2005 and 2006 with Renault, and also in his Ferrari debut in 2010. Do you remember the race when Massa went flying right in front of his car?
Yes.
Sideways? That was very impressive. Among active drivers, Kimi and LCH have never won at this track in Formula One. I believe LCH won a GP2 race here back
Perhaps.
In the day. Yeah. Nico Rosberg did set the fastest lap in his rookie year in 2006, driving for Team Willy, which was very impressive. Massa won back-to-back in 2007 and 8, while Jenson Button blew away everybody with the double diffuser in the 2009 Braun Mercedes. And talking of John, Jenson Button, his father John passed away, which was very sad.
Very, very sad.
Nice to see his him in a pink shirt at racetracks. And he was only, I think, 70 years old.
No, it's very sad to pass away at such a young age these days because longevity is pretty prevalent, especially when you live in the south of France.
Yeah.
Good Mediterranean food, but still very sad. And, of course, John Button used to do a lot of rallying
He was,
back in the day.
Yeah, and I remember one of the U.S. Probably it was the first U.S. Grand Prix at Indy. He was being interviewed in the BMW area or the year Ben Jensen was with BMW. So that was interesting. A lot of people have written a lot of good things on the web about him and his relationship with Jensen, especially noting the fact that he was not the pushy Paul that some fathers are. So our condolences to Button family. Next, we go to a place where you have spent some youth time.
Correct.
Viva España. The rain from Spain falls mainly on Massa. For the second race in a row, Nico Rosberg took pole position. sharing the front row with him was his teammate, lost in love, off the track. Bastian was third and Kimi fourth after Q3. Local hombre qualified P5, and we all know the answer to that question. Who can it be now? Pedro de la Rosa, the SMS specialist, or Marc Genet? Or was it somebody else, Mr. Rogers?
It could have been somebody else. It was definitely not Marc Genet, but it was El Machismo de España. Of course, we're talking about Fernando, and based on historical data, things and win was looking good for Rosberg. The previous 22 Grand Prix races in Montmelo have all been won from pole position, including the famous victory in 2012 by Señor Pastor Maldonado.
Yes, sir. Nico led from the start. Nando had a very impressive start and passed both Kimi and LCH on the outside. It's fun to watch on YouTube. And Fernando could hear the victory drums already. He was on a mission, like in the streets of Valencia not so long ago.
After 11 laps, when most of the front runners had made a pit stop for fresh tires, our Fernando Alonso from Monterrey, Mexico.
No, that would be Esteban Gutierrez. Mr. Rogers is having some difficulty in reading the teleprompter.
The problem is, I just want to say Fernando Alonso as much as I can during the podcast. But no, Esteban Gutierrez, who we've been following since his early days, was leading the race, which was a stunner.
Absolutely. Lap 13 was lucky for Nando. He took the lead when the Sauber driver dived into the pits. When Nando takes the lead, you know there is no surrender. It's total Spanish Inquisition for
Conquistador.
For anybody who challenges his authority, especially if they have a mustache and are from Alemania.
Wow. A mustache and Alemania?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, you know what Alemania is.
Yes, I do.
Germania.
I understand. Deutschland.
Yeah, there was humor in the race. This was interesting. There was humor in the race also. When LCH was told on the radio to conserve his tires, he read them his updated UJED resume and responded, "I can't go any slower."
I love stuff like that.
Yes, absolutely. These are classic lines now. You know, I know what I'm doing. Yes, 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 I'm doing it all the time. You don't have to tell me every lap.
But see, Fernando doesn't say stuff like that.
Yeah, but you know,
he's a professional.
Yeah, but when you ask for a birthday present, which is not a Ferrari, I mean, that's like hitting Luca below the belt.
It is below the belt.
Yeah.
There was no sign of a Red Bull driver on the podium, which was shocking. But there were two Ferrari drivers and an ex and future Ferrari driver on the podium. Nando winning with local McDonald's serving free Mc Paella with gazpacho. Kimi was second, 9.3 seconds behind, and further, 26 seconds behind, was the third man on the podium, Felipe Massa. And this was nice to see the two Ferrari drivers on the podium.
Oh, yeah, winning on home ground is always a very, very
absolutely
exciting thing for the local fan, people watching.
Absolutely. I think it's great, especially for Fernando. And he's extra motivated when he goes to España.
Oh, absolutely. He brings 6 tenths. Plus another 6 tenths.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay, Esteban Gutierrez is still searching for his first points in Formula Uno, set the fastest lap with a time of 126.217 on lap 56 of 66. Great achievement by the rookie who was very successful in junior Formulae. Kimi holds the track record from the 2008 race with a time of 121.670 from his first stint at Ferrari. This was the race where Kovalainen's McLaren buried itself in the tire barrier. I was at that race. Do you remember that accident?
Yeah.
That was very scary looking.
It was very scary, but when you hit the tire barrier as hard like that, it's always scary.
Yeah, and now let's hear it from the race winner.
Well, it was at the end a very good result, and all the victories comes from many factors together. For sure today one of those was the start. It was fantastic start, but we didn't have the space to go all together to the first corner, so I saved a little bit curse and I used it out of 10-3 in a very strange place, but we overtook two cars there, and that make a little bit easy then the race, but happy to win here. But we need more. We need more consistency races. We've been good race in Australia, bad in Malaysia, good in China, bad in Bahrain, good here. So we need to change this up and down. And in Monaco and Canada, we need to have some consistency podiums.
Okay, the championship situation after 5 races. Vettel leading with 89 points. 4 ahead of 2nd place Kimi Raikkonen. Nando was 3rd on 72. Hamilton 4th with 50. And Massa completed the top 5 with 45 points.
Vettel leading the championship.
You've heard that before.
It started
right?
early, didn't it?
Yeah, it's just once it gets going, it's over.
I know.
But the thing I like about this kid is the first championship, I never, ever thought he will win.
Well, he was young, making mistakes.
The way it came together for him was thanks to his great talent team and Ferrari team, you know, whatever that happened there. Then he had won from a comeback also. And then he had won with a completely dominating car. So what's going to stop him? As long as he has the best car, he's going to win. The only thing that's going to stop him would be a teammate from like a LCH or Kimi.
You mean cage rattling?
Yeah, cage rattling. That will stop him. And I, you know, we've seen he get flustered very easily.
He does.
And I have to say this. Not many people can hold up to cage rattling very well. Very few, I think. Very few. All hell breaks loose when there is... when there are two tigers in a cage.
It does get pretty exciting.
Oh, yeah.
I love it. Fernando, 2007.
Yeah. I mean, can you imagine, before coming, I was just going on, I think I was on gpupdate.net. They have a lot of videos there, and they were interviewing Anthony Davidson, and also an interview with Martin Brundle. And the issue was brought up of Daniel Ricciardo. And they were saying, you know, he has been very successful. He's going against somebody where the car and the team is all molded around one driver. It will take quite an effort to rattle this guy's cage. But I think if he can rattle, he probably will be faster one or two races. But if he can really rattle his cage like on a regular basis, then we got a huge problem.
Well, a lot of people are saying the same thing about Kimi Räikkönen going to Ferrari, where today's Ferrari is really built around Fernando Alonso.
Yeah.
Certainly not around Felipe Massa. So it'll take some time, but we know Kimi's quick, and he is like Mr. Spock, no emotions.
No, yeah, sure, but I have to agree with David Coulthard. He has only one strength, and that's his raw speed, raw talent. So it will be very interesting. I might just take on the Red Bull thing is Sebastian has so much experience, and Mark Webber ran very, very close to him, beat him a few times. It's just going to be a very tall order for Daniel Ricciardo to do to him what Senna did to Prost or LCH did to Nando. But we wish everybody all the best. Okay, three in a row for... in the streets of Monte Carlo now.
Exactly, Monaco.
Yeah, Monaco Principality. Three in a row for Nico Rosberg as far as pole positions were concerned. And there was more domination for the German driver in the race. Nico won his home race. You know, he was pretty much...
He was born here.
Yeah, raised there. He was born in Germany, but he has lived all his life there.
Yeah, I mean, from elementary school on up.
Yeah. You know, very interesting thing, story about him. When he went to school, the first day of his school in his life, he was sitting in a classroom, and he looked at another kid with long hair, and he thought, this is some girl. You know who that kid was? Nelson Piquet Jr.
Exciting.
Yeah, very interesting. Okay, Nico won his home race, which was also won by his papa way back in 1983. Vettel was second, and last year's winner Webber was third. LCH was fourth, Sutil was fifth. He normally goes well here, just as Kimi Räikkönen. He made a grown man cry some years ago in Monte Carlo. Jev, your homeboy, Jean-Éric Vergne, was 8th for Toro Rosso. Bianchi and Massa were outside the 107% requirement but were allowed to race. Fastest lap, Sebastian Vettel for Red Bull with a time of 116.577 on lap 77 of 78. Record here is 2004. From 2004, Master Schumacher at 114.439. Couple of questions from this, covering this race. Jean-Éric Vergne versus Daniel Kvyat. How do you think that will pan out?
I think it's going to be bizarre. I mean, he's talented. Don't get me wrong.
No, he's very quick. There's no question about it.
But I think Jean-Éric Vergne is going to blow him out of the water. That's what I think.
Eat him like an escargot?
Exactly.
As we have said a few times. Yeah, this is a great, great opportunity. The kid is quick. But for me, again, purely...
He's what, 19?
Yeah, something like that. My question mark is that he was in Formula BMW a couple of years, I believe. And also Formula Renault. He has won quite a few races, you know, no question about it. But in GP3, he won the championship against Facundo Regalia. And that's where I have a question mark. Winning is always great, and we wish him all the best. But to go into Formula 1, you know, it's not just the Formula 1. It's the pressure. You're the only Russian. Then the expectations are so high. People around you are always pumping you up. You're the best. You're the greatest. And sooner or later, if you don't perform, it's going to, like Mark Priestley said, if you have a between Hamilton and Kovalainen, if you have a teammate who's consistently beating you in practice, qualifying race, sooner or later it will get to you. And I'm not saying we are hoping that this will happen to Daniel, but we wish him all the best. But I would like to see, love to see Red Bull give him, regardless of how much he struggled, at least two full seasons. Let's see what he can do.
We'll see what happens there.
Yeah. Oh, Canada, round seven.
I like Canada. It's a great track.
You know, I'll tell you about the Canadian track and the Melbourne track. I don't know the sections of the track, but both in Melbourne and in Canada, there is a section of the track where the cars come maybe like after four or five corners, and they are like sort of a slight turn to the right or left, and it's surrounded by trees hanging over the track. Every time I see that portion from Australia and Canada, it's just like, it's a special effect on my body and soul.
Frisson.
Yeah, it is very, very beautiful. So I'll have you take a stab at the Canadian Grand Prix.
Okay, well, there was no big surprises here. Vettel was on pole and looking for his first win in Île Notre-Dame. A few years ago, he was on his way to victory, but Button rang the bell on the final lap. But this time, victory bells were ringing in Berlin, in his hometown of Hoppenheim.
Yeah, and young man has become a father of a little daughter.
That's very true. But he, you know, his girlfriend, very attractive young woman, but they're not married.
Well, that's
I was stunned.
Yeah,
I thought
that's their business.
I know it's normal.
Yeah, and it's interesting. I hardly ever see her at the races. I don't know if she's kept in the background or whatever, or maybe Bernie Eccleston told him to put her as a domestic appliance.
Did you ever see Corina, Michael Schumacher's wife?
Very rarely.
In the paddock?
Very rarely.
Yeah. What about Fernando's girlfriend? Occasionally, she'd show up because he wanted to...
I'd like to see her on the, you know, Jumping for Joy for
Is he still with the Russian girl?
Yeah, I think so.
That's loving.
Yeah, and... yeah, do you remember Nicole Scherzinger when Hamilton won the championship? What Baba Varsha called a red cocktail dress, jumping around. That was really nice. Mm. Okay, Nanda was second over 14 seconds behind LCH, third, and Weber fourth. He also set the fastest lap at 116.182, one lap before the end of the 70-lap race. The two-legged Rubinho holds the track record at 113.622 from his 2004 Ferrari days.
And the 2004 Ferrari was a fast car.
Yeah, and he's still wishing his teammate was Eddie Irvine or Heikki Kovalainen or Fisico, not some guy who would not talk to anybody but just drive the race car. Unfortunately, this was very sad. The Canadian Grand Prix was marred by the death of a marshal. 38-year-old Mark Robinson was killed in a freak accident. Esteban Gutierrez crashed his Sauber after rejoining the track following his final pit stop. According to an FIA statement, and I quote, the recovery vehicle had lifted the car to return it to the pits, and while doing this, the worker dropped his radio and attempted to pick it up. As he did this, he stumbled and was hit and run over by the recovery vehicle. This is so bizarre, so tragic, very, very bad. And I remember, I think it was, I was watching Sky TV when, you know, the camera did not capture everything. I remember there was a comment before, and you know what the tragedy had taken place, that Martin Brundle made, that this is, you know, there's some more to it because they're taking way too long to clear this up. And then we found out what it was. This was the first fatality in Formula One since the 2001 Australian Grand Prix. A marshal, Graham Beveridge, was hit and suffered fatal injuries from a wheel following a clash involving Ralph Schumacher and Jacques Villeneuve. The first ever Canadian Grand Prix at Île Notre-Dame was won by local hero Gilles Villeneuve in 1978, driving the beautiful Ferrari 312 T3. And, you know, talking about this accident in Australia, which also killed a marshal between Villeneuve and Ralph, I don't know if you remember, Montoya was with Williams at that time. Shortly after this, him and Jacques Villeneuve came together at some race or some qualifying session, and Montoya made a comment to him, words to the effect, well, you've already killed a guy in Formula One, and Frank Williams read him the riot act.
Yeah.
As he should have.
Well, he is the percolating Colombian.
Yes. Faster than Juan Valdez, that's for sure. Okay, we go to the home of British motor racing.
Now, this was an interesting Grand Prix, especially for Pirelli.
Oh, yes. You know, I don't know what to make of this tire situation. Goodyear had this issue at Indy some years ago. And then, of course, we remember the historic US Grand Prix with the Michelin. But I'm glad it's been sorted out and it did not roll into many other races.
Yeah, almost red flag, but not.
Yeah. Mercedes grabbed the front row. LCH was the happy local chappie as he took pole from Nico. They were followed by two Red Bull happy and not so happy campers, Vettel and Weber respectively. Paul Di Resa was fifth but was sent to the back of the grid for an underweight car. And some of us, the old ones, remember Uncle Ken and his timber trick from the 1984 season.
The 52-lap race was won by Nico Rosberg, third career win for KK's kid. Many thought LCH will be rattling his cage, but that has not been the case. Perhaps LCH is preoccupied with pussyfooting. Mark Webber was second and also set the fastest lap of the race on the final lap.
None, though. Your man was third, followed by Hamilton and Raikkonen. Fastest lap, Webber, 133.401 on the final lap, which would be lap number 52. The track record is 130.874 from 2010. And who was that? That was the man who used to live in Oxford and now in another Oviedo. The one and only.
El macho.
Macho hombre de viva España. Okay, question for you from this segment, sir. Keke Rosberg, LCH. When Jensen went to McLaren, everybody thought, myself included, he's going into the Lions den. Did very well, won two races before LCH got one. I'm very, very surprised, frankly speaking, that Nico Rosberg has not been rattled by LCH.
Not at all.
What say you?
I agree. And as a matter of fact, it almost looked like they're fairly well evenly matched in terms of talent.
Yeah, yeah. And the, I mean, the results say so.
And there's no infighting or bickering.
What about in-flight burrito when they go to Brazil?
I think that was an empanada.
Oh, wow. That's pretty good. Yeah. LCH, I am, you know, he spends a lot of time in California.
He does.
I'm hoping that Nicole moving in, maybe we'll have a, she will say to him, keep calm and start winning. Maybe she'll have a soothing effect on him. I don't know.
I don't know, but it's also very interesting how different Nico and LCH's personalities are. I mean, completely. LCH likes the bling of Los Angeles, the rap artist, the hanging out and being super bad.
Yep.
And Nico's the opposite.
Well, the backgrounds are very different, you know. I mean, just think about it. One guy, father was a professional racing driver, Formula One world champion. The company he moves around is very different. Yeah, born in Germany, lived all his life in Monte Carlo. And you have to have a pretty penny, then some, to live there, last I checked. And then Lewis Hamilton background is very different. And, you know, you have to do in life what you have to do. But as far as the racing part is concerned, you know, I just hope that he focuses on motor racing and not have these. Like one of his rapper friends, apparently at the Canadian Grand Prix, they were with him in the garage. And one of them made a comment to the media that the steering wheel of a Formula One costs more than the house most of the F1 fans live in. And those are not very nice things to say. And you don't need these people in a Formula One pit. But, you know, that's just my opinion. Okay, shall we move to the fatherland, Deutschland über alles?
Love the fatherland.
Yes, of course. Nürburgring was the scene for the 2000... Oh, talking of fatherland, they may be talking to the bad boy in a courtroom very soon. Mr. Bernie Ecclestone has been invited to come and take care of some German business. You cost us money.
On the other hand, he's also trying to buy Nürburgring, I believe.
Yeah. I think he's got another ring coming his way.
I like that.
I think, you know, it's pretty much the beginning of the end of his. I mean, he's also up there in age.
Age,
you know.
And that's becoming more and more the talk of the town. Who will continue to run Formula One?
Yeah.
I mean, will CVC decide and pick somebody outside of the sport? We don't know.
No, that Bernie has a lot of, one thing I'll say about him, he's surrounded by a lot of old, trusted people who know what they're doing, hence the business is so successful.
Yeah, I'd like to see Ross Brawn.
Run Formula One?
Or Flavio.
You know, I was watching one day an interview, like a press conference on YouTube, and you can only see Ross Brawn, and he's saying something, and apparently one of the journalists was giggling or something, and he looks at him and he goes, can you please stop laughing? He's you don't mess around with these people. Okay, the race. Well, let's talk about Colli. Pole, race winner, and fastest lap belong to three different drivers, which is kind of rare these days. LCH outdueled Bastian for the pole. Vettel took the win while Fernando Alonso set the fastest lap of the race with a time of 133.468 on lap 51 of lap 60. Track record was set here by Schumacher, and of course, any of these track records, when we say Schumacher, we're talking about the full Schumacher.
Not the half Schumacher.
Yeah, in 2004 at 129.468. Romain Grosjean was third with Nando fourth. Brit boys Hamilton and Button were fifth and sixth respectively. Weber seventh, Perez eighth. And a pair of local chaps completed the top 10, Rosberg 9 and Hülkenberg 10th. Do you have any preference for the German Grand Prix at the new Nürburgring or the Hockenheim Ring? Or the new Hockenheim Ring, I should say.
To be honest with you, no. Because they're both former...
They've been castrated.
Yes, they've been, I wouldn't say castrated, but certainly changed completely.
Yeah, I mean, I used to love that inboard camera on the long straight heading toward Ostkurve or whatever it was. And they really messed up this Hockenheim Ring thing. And, of course, no comparison, but I totally understand you cannot do a Formula One race at the old Nürburgring, 14 miles. But I'm used to this. It's a very nice facility. Both of them. They're
great facilities.
Yeah, both very nice, very beautiful. And just the drive to Nürburgring is fantastic. And the Hockenheim Ring, the tall pine trees and the big stadium section, it's pretty impressive.
Yeah. I mean, don't forget Spa has been truncated quite a bit, too. I mean, it used to be a much longer race.
It's still Garden of Eden.
But it's still fantastic. That
way beyond fantastic.
From the vintage tracks, that one probably didn't lose any of its sex appeal, let's say,
when they
shortened it.
Yeah, and it's just beautiful. And Suzuka also is very nice. So is Interlagos. Okay, so now we are moving to round 10 and talk about Hungarian goulash. And the country, of course, by the natives... is called Magyar. Okay, Magyar was 70 laps of ecstasy for LCH. The boy who grew up with McLaren took his first non-McLaren Formula One victory from pole position, now driving for the star from Stuttgart but based in Brackley, United Kingdom. And very pleased to say, not too long ago when the team was called Braun, and this was a great day in my lifetime, Mr. Brazier and Moore stood outside the gates and saw newly crowned world champion Jenson Button drive away in a Mercedes sedan, of course, waving to the masses, perhaps on his way to Woking.
Kimi was second, Vettel third, Weber fourth, and Fernando Alonso completed the top five. Pastor picked up a point from his 10th position, first point of the season for the driver, and the team.
The race took place on July 28, just ahead of the month-long break, but this would be the last time Sebastian Vettel would finish a race as a non-winner in 2013. The party for four in a row was about to set sail as they headed for Eau Rouge. Fastest lap, Mark Webber, 124.069 on lap 61, track record. Michael Schumacher, 2004, 1 minute 19.071 seconds. And now a word from our race winner.
We heard you say probably the most important win of your career so far.
Yeah, I really... Winning is just the greatest, of course. And, you know, I had been on the phone to my mum this weekend, who's been incredibly supportive, and my dad's been calling me. Been talking to my dad a lot the last week, who's just been so supportive and really, you know, just trying to keep my spirits up. And to come here, I just, after a real downer for the last few weeks, I really wasn't expecting it. And yeah, I got into the race and then all of a sudden I was still in the lead. I was able to look after the tyres, and particularly when I put the primes on, we were improving lap after lap. And it's a great feeling. I'm so proud of the team, grateful for all the hard work and for Ross to give me the opportunity to be a part of the team. And I feel like the thought in my mind through the whole race was someone that was really special to me.
Fantastic. You know what I loved about Hungary?
Mm-hmm.
Not only the red lights, you know, the red light district.
Yeah, well, that's
lurking.
I'm told it's legal.
It is legal, but it adds a certain je ne sais quoi.
There, green doesn't mean go. Red means entree.
Exactly. But still, Hungary's been a good track for a lot of people. Jenson Button, Fernando Alonso, Honda. So...
Yeah, of course, and of course that fantastic pass by Nelson Piquet over Senna in the first race, unbelievable. If anybody has not seen it, please check it out, Hungarian Grand Prix 1986. I have to say, of all the people I've spoken to, you racing fans, quite a few I've met over the years, team personnel, drivers, they all have a very, very positive experience about going to the Hungarian track. Budapest has always been known as a very nice city. And I more would like to go there someday, you know.
Yeah, me too. A lot of Finnish fans actually show up to this race.
Yes, good. Normally we do these things in two parts, you know, part one because it's the full season. I was thinking, you know, the second half of the season, which started with the Belgian Grand Prix, where we were there, you know, with Mr. Brazier and Dr. Mark Farrington, and what a fantastic time we had. And we stayed at a hotel called Le Nid de Hirondelle, and you can translate what that means. And the steak there was fantastic. This was the first time I had a steak outside the United States. Seriously, that was very, very good. But I was thinking, do we really need a second part of the season review? Because the two words will describe the second part. Sebastian Vettel.
Pretty much, yeah. It was over, and even Fernando Alonso said, after Silverstone, the updates to the Ferrari did nothing. They sort of went backwards. You know, he would continue getting podiums. But he knew. So many people knew.
It's over.
It was over. It was done. Vettel and the Red Bull dominating machine, especially when Fernando came out and said for his birthday he wants a Red Bull. Of course, we talked about this a moment ago.
And he was not talking about the drink.
No, exactly. And that's really the key in saying he's capitulated.
Yes.
And that was sad.
And that's when Luca called his secretary, hey, get me Steve Robertson.
Not only that, but some people even accused Fernando, including Bernie Eccleston, of pretty much giving up on the season and throwing his arms up in the air, which I was stunned for Bernie. But Bernie actually adores Sebastian Vettel.
Yeah, well, it's good for the sport. But the thing is, you know, problem in this day, if you have a second-best car, you know the guy ahead is not going to break down. And when you have a Sebastian Vettel, I mean, you know, if I'll tell you, this is my take. That car was so superior that any top driver would have won the race. But let's just say Nando could at least run with this guy. Then it would take a Sebastian Vettel or a Nando himself to win the championship. Because if you put a Montoya or LCH in that car, you know they're going to run into somebody while leading by a 40-second margin. So it still takes a good driver to bring a fastest car home.
Yes.
And it's not, this is not, you know, no driver car that will win a race. So Sebastian has done a tremendous job and all.
Yeah, and his run of Grand Prix wins in the second half of the season really showed that Red Bull did their homework. They did their job in the car development, and that car was unbeatable in the second half of the season.
And you don't see Sebastian Vettel getting involved in, you know,
every little
drunk
nuance
on the street, holding on to a rubber dolphin doll in Bahamas or Canary Island, wherever it happened with Kimi. You don't see him running into issues with his off-track life. Nobody knows.
Well, remember when Sebastian Vettel commented that whenever everybody's at the pool, he's working with the team in the engineering department and in the technical department to make sure he's going to win Grand Prix. There is a little bit of a difference there, you have to admit.
Yeah, you know, it's, I mean, we talked about this before the show also. And that, you know, when you have drivers like, you know, like Joe Ramirez said about Ayrton Senna, that after the team's debriefing between Honda engineers, McLaren team, and Alain Prost sitting, when it was all over, which was extensive, you know, detail anyway, Senna would still be there for another couple of hours talking to Honda engineers. And he says, to this day, I don't know what they were talking about. Same with Schumacher, you know, coming there, not talking to anybody. Niki Lauda was very, very methodical, Alain Prost. But the results are there to prove there was some fruit of those labors, you know. Different people do different things. So it's good to see a very hardworking guy succeed, well-deserving, which is all these top-line drivers have been. Okay, final analysis of the season. I'll do my mantra, and then you do your own Le Francais mantra.
Yeah.
How's that? Okay, when you're hot, you're hot. Like a fine Weber grill, it was Bastian who left his mark on the 2013 Formula One season. 13 wins, unbeaten from Spa onwards. 4 championships in a row, all at the age of 26. Super wunderbar, I say. None, though, 2006 is a distant memory. Petrov cost him his third title, and Lotus lads made their contribution in 2012. Now Kimi is back at the stable. Time will tell who will be Luca's Elie Shiba in 2014.
Wow.
Hamilton, 2008 for him is a distant memory. Lost in love, but Mercedes has provided him fresh air supply. But he really needs to shed some excess and Hollywood baggage. Raikkonen, he knows how to be very quick. According to ex-teammate DC, Kimi is a one-trick pony, and that trick is his natural and tremendous raw speed. But Kimi has proven he has another trick up his sleeve or his tattoo. That is how to get paid $25 million without driving for Ferrari. Any thoughts on the season, sir?
It was a great season, but just too much domination. You know, at the beginning, Australia, with Kimi Raikkonen winning from 7th, I was excited. I thought we would have a nice fight for the championship. But in the end, it was Vettel, 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 Vettel. And that's it. That's why I'm looking forward to 2014. Even playing field, so to speak. Obviously, some teams have more money than others. With the new regulations, the new car, I don't want to hear Ferrari babbling about the calibration on their wind tunnel. Let's hope that the top teams have some good packages. I want to see McLaren win, but I want to see Fernando win the championship, period.
That would be fantastic. And to win, we already know he's one of the greats, but to win a championship with Raikkonen as a teammate, especially if he's awake and alert, that will be a tremendous feather in his cap.
Absolutely. So let's hope that Ferrari's got their act together this year.
Yeah. And now we come to our 2014 looking forward statement. Okay. We know who the heavies are. Let's look at some possible stars and cage rattlers in the making. Lotus. After a take one, take two, and a take three, Romain Grosjean has made a name for himself. Champion in every series he has competed in, the former Geneva banker will now try to make a case to be picked up by a top team in the near future, and rumors are still floating around about Lotus viability.
This is the biggest problem at Lotus, is their financial situation.
That's always the problem, you know.
Yeah, but, you know, a team that has winning capabilities, obviously some good cars. But the other thing is, Pat Simmons at Williams, he's been picking at some of the old Benetton guys from Lotus, and he's telling them to go to Williams.
Door, yeah.
Because Williams could be the one to watch as well, even though I think Mercedes is going to be the big dog.
Yeah, I think it will be Mercedes, McLaren. I'll be shocked if McLaren has a dud of a car 2 years in a row.
Well, the biggest problem with McLaren is their last year with the Mercedes.
Yeah.
So the umbilical cord, so to speak, has been cut between Mercedes and McLaren. McLaren is always, they're getting data from Honda right now for 2015.
Getting or giving?
I don't know.
We
but
don't
still,
know. Yeah.
It's going to be interesting.
Yeah. Okay, performance for Grosjean and Lotus this year will depend a lot on the cash situation. Skipping the first pre-season test is not good news for Romain, but he survived the troubles at Renault post-Singapore fiasco and should keep his head calm against his teammate Pastor Maldonado. Force India driver Nico, like Romain, also won championship in every category he competed in prior to Formula One, has bounced around without getting paid since winning the A1 GP title many years ago. He is back with Dr. Vijay Mallya and will face another whippersnapper, Sergio Perez. Despite not winning any motor racing championship in Europe, not that I know of, Perez has picked up the pace, and we're not talking Picard sauce here, and has really impressed against Kamui Kobayashi and became a pest for Button also at McLaren. If he can tame Hulkenberg, he will be in F1 for a long time, even if Telmex sponsorship is disconnected down the road. I say advantage Hulkenberg.
It's very possible, but it could be an interesting fight. Sergio could be the thorn that causes some issues for some of their races if they're banging wheels, qualifying on the second road together. We saw what Sergio did with Button at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, Sauber. Esteban Gutierrez had a great career up to GP2, but like Jules Bianchi and Felipe Nasr, faced serious headwind from GP2 veterans. Had a difficult first half season last year, but then impressed industry insiders. With Sutil as teammate, Esteban's job numero uno will be to stay ahead of the piano man. Otherwise, the cuckoo clock will be singing, "Sad song says so much."
Yep, and it'll be the one way in-flight burrito.
Exactly. Toro Rosso, the goose is cooked by Germany for one of their drivers. If the goose will be cooked by Germany of this season. If Jev is trailing Daniel Kvyat, which I highly doubt, then Dr. Marco will get his machete out. For the young Russian, he has to fight like he's trying to get out of the siege at Leningradsky.
Ooh.
This is a big, big step for Kvyat, and I hope he makes it. Toro Rosso needs to have him as we said, for two full seasons.
And let's hope they're not throwing some young kid into a nest of piranhas, basically.
Yeah, you know, they could have taken this guy, Portuguese guy, Antonio Felix
da Costa.
2 years ago, he could do nothing wrong. He was winning here, there, everywhere. And this season, just, I don't know, when he got too excited or too confident that he will get the ride. But if they had put him in Formula One, with him, they could have done what they have done to other people. You'd see Scott Speed halfway through the season. Man, you're still making mistakes. Obrigado, on the way to Lisboa.
Yeah, not only that, but they're based in Italy. For a moment, I thought maybe Rafael Marciello.
He's a Ferrari kid.
He is, but they're powered by they were powered by Ferrari. Toro Rosso, of course, going with the Renault Package this season.
Yeah.
It should be interesting, but I thought Rafael might get a chance because for a while he was hot, but then tapered off.
No, but he is very hot. He has gone very well. I think he did GP2 testing. GP2 will really... I still say in the environment we are in today, in 10 years it might be different, that in GP2, to all young drivers, please do not come to GP2 till you do a World Series by Renault.
You should.
You should really come to GP2 where you have 4 or 5 years of single-seater experience, because if you don't win in GP2 first-year dominating style, even if you win first-year dominating style, there is no guarantee, but at least your phone will ring. But man, if you do not win for GP2 first-year, the calls are not coming. The area code will not be for Woking, Maranello, or Brackley, or whatever. Top teams are not going to call you. That's just my word to the wise.
I concur completely. I'm looking forward to 2014, but let's talk about testing coming up January 28th at Jerez de la Frontera.
Yes, sir, I am going there, and behind the scene, F1 Weekly is making every effort, and I thank the charming host of F1 Weekly, Mr. Clark Rogers, for helping me try to get possibly the media pass. We're trying some other legal avenue, not legal, but you know, like legitimate avenues through my friend, Mr. Peter Nygaard of Grand Prix Photo. If he can get media credential, it will be a incredible achievement for us, both of us, not just me. I'm really looking forward to it, to be able to sit down at the table with Nando, Vettel, Raikkonen. This is a lifetime opportunity, and hopefully it will help us get credential for more races, not just testing. And I would like to go to a few races, being able to get into the media area and paddock and all that. Then we can make more contacts and do a lot of interviews. But stay tuned, please, and hopefully we will be able to do what we want to do, which is motor racing.
Yeah, we're trying. We're not afraid to fail.
Yeah.
We've been denied before. And let's just face it, F1 Weekly has developed some very thick skin.
Yeah, and when we have very good contacts, I got to tell you something. You know, I hear a lot of stuff that I cannot share, because I'm glad. I mean, I'm thankful, trust me, far away and telling me on the phone or by email. Couple of driver announcements. I don't want to get into details. I was told like a day or two before this is happening. And so I said, oh, fine. You know, I'm not going to put on the forum and say, here, I heard this. You know, it's not nice to do those things. So we have some very good contacts, industry, and hopefully, you know, I sent an email to Robin Friends, and there are reports, and I can say this because it's on the web, that he may be a reserve driver at Caterham. And this is a kid who won 3 championships in a row, tremendous racing talent. And he wrote back to me right away. He said, yeah, I look forward to seeing you, and I hope to be there.
Quickly, before we wrap it up, is Kamui Kobayashi going to be back on the grid?
That's what they're saying, Kamui Kobayashi and Marcus Ericsson. And I also see, because I've known Marcus for a few years, and his, you know, the gentleman, Bouvenius, who handles his fan club, I sent him an email. I said, hey, it's all over the web now. I mean, is it true? And he said, you know, the usual, they're working and trying to make things happen. But the hot rumor is, actually, I'm glad he brought this up. According to Autosprint.it, which is a very well-known Italian magazine, they are saying that Kamui Kobayashi and Marcus Ericsson will be the drivers, and this kid, Robin Friends, will be the reserve driver. So let's hope we will know quite a few drivers on the F1 grid if this thing pans out.
Well, we've been around for a long time.
We've been around.
This is going to be our 9th season, Nasser.
Yeah.
So it's fantastic.
And we're like Avis. I don't know if you're number 2 or number 3 or number 1 or whatever, but we try harder.
We do try harder. Nas, thanks for an outstanding season review of 2013. Of course, one more thing. Prediction, Australia. Who wins?
Prediction, Australia. Who wins? My prediction would be, Clark, either Fernando Alonso or Sebastian Vettel. somebody's going to get the turbo package right. So that would be my...
Okay, I'm going out on a limb. Mm-hmm. Romain Grosjean, Lotus F1.
Good for you, man, and good for Romain, because I'm a big fan of Romain Grosjean. And my thanks to some of our listeners who have put in late orders for the calendar, and also the general support we've had from all our listeners over the years. And we look forward to continued, listenership.
Okay, yeah, order some calendars. We've got plenty.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
And ladies.
And we want to thank all the listeners. Good night.
Absolutely. Bye-bye.